Welcome back. Here we are, Masechet Kiddushin, Jeff Sachs, Mishkan Sipora, Web Yeshiva, Daf Nun, Daf Mem Dalet Omid Beis 44B, all the way at the bottom. It seems that lots of people are taking vacation tonight. Include. Oh, here's Ben. Ben, did you bring a bottle?
No, I'm sorry. Why don't you know in advance?
We were told.
He said last week.
He's not coming for that really? Week. Yeah.
I wasn't here last week.
Well, at least he's got a good excuse.
I'll say there.
Since here, somebody for the morning.
Okay. Well, next week also Saul's away. So if anybody wants to bring some refreshment, liquid or solid, you're welcome to do so. I'll bring the shoe.
You bring the one this year.
That's the things I remember. So if not for shoe, well, I would remember.
What? We're at the bottom of the very bottom. You see the second to last line. Ula had said that
we're in the bottom of
Nun. Sorry, Mem Dalet Omud Beis 44B. Okay. Ula had said that if a girl accepts kiddushin, a ketana, a girl under bat mitzvah accepts kiddushin without her father's knowledge, she does not need mi'un.
Does she need a get?
And she doesn't need a get.
She doesn't need either.
Unless there was a, according to one opinion, unless there was a case where they were already mishudachim, meaning the parents had already agreed. It's not like the father never heard of this fellow before. But the father had already agreed in principle that they should get married, in which case then you have to say that maybe the father was nitratze, that when he heard about it, he retroactively said, yeah, that's okay with me. I'm glad. On the contrary, it saves you the money making the wedding if they elope.
Even had he not made a shiv.
Well, in the absence of any evidence, so then we say no. We say that it's meaningless.
We say that afterwards. He says, oh, you know what? I really like
no,
this.
In the that's not the absence of evidence. That's...
No, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
His mitzvah said afterwards, without
but so let's say, so maybe if the shidduch had already been arranged in advance, so then you can say, so Ula says that this is halachically inconsequential when they get married. So we brought all types of proofs to say, no, maybe there is some halachic consequence to this. What's the svara for Ula? That it's halachically inconsequential.
She's a ketana.
She has no da'at. She can't accept kedushin on her own. And in this, admittedly by our standards, a bizarre case of where the father marries her off as a ketana and he accepts the kesef kedushin on her behalf, right? So then he's the one that's creating it as her, not as her shaliach, but as her. You know, when you're. Parents are also shlichim for their children, but they're not shlichim. They're apotroposim. They are parentis. They're not even in loco parentis. They are parentis. Parents have certain rights and authority over their minor children. I mean, the minor children might have opinions about that. I can tell you. I have a little girl who's on the eve of bat mitzvah. She wouldn't go for this. And rightly so. But the halacha says that a parent has certain rights.
Father
certain rights. So motiv Rav Hamnuna, you see the last line. So Rav Hamnuna attacks this position, brings an attack question on Ula's position and wants to raise the possibility that maybe, indeed, there is halachic consequence to this act, which all agree should not be done l'chatchila. But if it is done, it has some. So what is that? So you have to work through our way through the case. Now this is one of those examples. You know, I often say that you've heard me use the metaphor of Gemara poker. I've used this metaphor many times. It happens that I use this metaphor without good knowledge because I don't really know much about poker. There are people in the neighborhood. There's a serious poker game. It's been going on for 25 years in the neighborhood, a weekly poker game. I'm not part of it. But how does poker work? We all know that there are different hands of cards, and different sets of cards are stronger than others. A full house beats a straight flush.
the other way around, but okay.
Okay, so explain to me, Elliot. Explain to me what's the pecking order of
hair?
Yeah, I might be able to.
A royal flush.
Hair, three of a kind.
Flush, royal flush.
Two pair.
Cecil, I'm guessing that you have more knowledge of this than the people around the table. Do you know anything about poker?
And flush and full house.
So we need to hear this thing at the metaphor.
No, but you under, but even if, but you understand, you understand. I'm sorry, I'm surprised David hasn't already Googled it. Then, do you know it? I mean, are you embarrassed to say that?
The top end is a royal flush.
Anyway, but we all know that one hand of cards was.
Yeah, but it's the top end.
So when an attack question comes, when an attack question comes, the attacker presents his hands of cards, right? He presents his evidence. Now, in this case, sometimes the evidence is another Gemara. Sometimes it's very often a Braita. It's very often a Braita. You know, the Braita being a Tanaitic source, an earlier source, a source from a more authoritative period, but not one that's so authoritative as a Mishnah.
Because the Mishnah, the higher the hand, you're saying, is no issue.
Right. In other words, if you and I are having a machloket and you're holding a Mishnah and I'm merely holding a Braita or even a Tosefta, you understand the difference between these sources? The Tanaim, the rabbis of the Mishnaic period, right? They said all types of things. They taught all types of things, right? Some of those were codified by Rabbi Yehuda Nasi in the Mishnah. That's top order. Anything that was not codified in the Mishnah was left out of the Mishnah. That is technically all called a Braita. Braita means outside, left out. Some of the Braitiot, some of those statements that were not codified in the Mishnah, were then later codified in the Tosefta. Not to be confused with Tosafot, the commentary on the page. The Tosefta, which is an appendix to the Mishnah. It's usually printed in the back.
They are less than Mishnah, but more than Braita.
But more than Braita, because they've been codified. And then there were all of the Braitiot, no doubt the majority of the statements of the Tanaim, because after all, there were many, many hundreds of Chachamim, maybe 1,000, maybe more Chachamim. We don't even know all their names. Chachamim in the period of the Mishnah, who said all types of things. I'm not saying that they said, pass the soda. Right, that's not a Tanaitic state. Not everything said by a Tana is Tanaitic material of this regard. But they said many, many teachings which weren't codified. So this vast body of oral teaching was preserved for many generations in the period of the Amoraim. And for the 300 some odd years of the Amoraim, the Braitiot were still remembered Baal Peh. There were people who specialized in remembering the Braitiot Baal Peh, and they quote them. And how do we know them? Because they're quoted by the Amoraim in the Gemara. That's much of the evidence, much of the DNA of the Gemara are the Amoraim quoting these Braitiot. Now, sometimes because they were oral, there's debates about the transmission. Who said what? What did they say this or did they say that? Do you have the correct version of the Braita? Because if I'm introducing it as evidence in support of my position, I have to get it right. And this is much of the work of rolling up our sleeves and going through the Gemara, which by now you are all familiar with. No doubt there were many teachings of the Tanaim that didn't make it into the Mishnah, didn't make it into the Sefta, weren't quoted by the Amoraim, and were lost to us. So sometimes when they present the card, you have to figure out how is this piece of evidence which is being presented, which is being laid on the table, which is sometimes about a completely different sugya, or only a tangentially related sugya, how does this source constitute the attack on the position of Ula, which is under discussion? So sometimes on the surface, so you have to first work your way through and then pause and then go back and say, okay, this is the deck of cards. This is the hand of cards which has been laid on the table. How does it, because the Gemara doesn't always spell it out. That's what Steinsaltz does very well. Right? Steinsaltz, in his interstitial commentary, will, after explaining the source, then say in parentheses, I forget whether it's the round parentheses or the square parentheses, will say, and this is why, and this is against the opinion of Ula, because Ula says X, and this source says or implies Y. Okay. Ula, after all, is only an Amora. So if Taka, there's a Braita against him, he's in trouble. Unless, and then if that's the case, what is the Gemara going to do? What's gonna be the Gemara's first impulse? Ula says X, but a Braita says Y. Yeah, we'll just try to resolve it. The Gemara is, if possible, the Gemara, although not necessarily in this case. Yeah, the Gemara always has a harmonizing influence to say, no, it's not a contradiction. Because either it's a case of apples and oranges, or it's a case of the Braita was incorrectly quoted, or you didn't understand Ula's position correctly. Ula was talking about something else. Okay, so the Gemara goes on. Okay, welcome to Alexandria. I don't recognize you. You look new to us, so let us know who you are and where you're from. You can turn on your microphone. You could just send in a chat. So the Gemara says, motif, Rav Hamnuna says the following. Ein mochra lekrovim. Another very problematic. It's the last line of the Gemara. Another very problematic case. The Torah, do we have a Chumash here? Yes, we have Chumash most. The Torah gives authority to a father to sell his minor daughter as an amma, as a maidservant. Not just to, you know, hire her out. I mean, that, you know, we understand. You can put your kids to work. You can hire your kids out. When I was a kid, they used to do such things. Send us off to work, earn a living, earn your keep. And now kids are spoiled. That's not what this is talking about. This is to sell your daughter into a kind of
slavery.
Well, bondage or a kind of servitude. She's not a slave. She's not a slave in the conventional sense of.
We can wash the words.
I'm washing the words with soap and water. But basically sell her into slavery. When you sell the daughter into slavery, or into bondage.
Indentured servitude.
Because it's certainly not forever. It's for a set period of time. The master has the right to upgrade this relationship. Right? And the father knows this when he sells off the minor daughter. Because after all, the father, why would the father do this?
Can't afford to raise
her? Yeah, it's only in a case of, it's in a case of financial destitution. And an Eved Ivri, after all, has certain protections, including financial protections. He could, what could the father have done? He could have married her off. But maybe, I don't know, maybe he didn't want to do that. Maybe he wanted to. After all, marrying off a daughter has longer consequences than selling her off to a period of indentured servitude. And then, you know, when she gets out of that, she can, after all, then choose who she wants to marry on her own when she's an adult. So maybe he didn't want to marry her off. Maybe she's, I don't know, a homely girl and he couldn't find a shidduch for her. Who knows? Or maybe he just didn't like the idea of, you know, this whole idea of an 11-year-old girl marrying her off to someone.
But the slavery is not all that much better.
No. Well, slavery is after all for a set period of time, and it's for
what you're about to get to.
And it doesn't involve the marital relations of marriage and etc. So
and you get as good a pillow as your master.
What?
You get as good a pillow as your master.
And but en chinami. However, the Torah says. This is Parshas Mishpatim, Shmot Perek Kafal. I'm sorry, I don't have it on the screen. This is Exodus chapter 21, verse 7. When a man sells his daughter to servitude, lo tetzei ketzeit havadim. Im ra'a be'enei adoneha asher lo ya'ada vehefda la'am nofri lo yimshol la'mochra bevigdo ba. David, how would you translate that?
A whole sentence. It's a bit of a phrase, but I
can't remember it all.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Uh,
if a father sells his daughter as a servant, she won't go out like a regular servant. She won't leave the servitude like a servant. If she doesn't, if he doesn't like her, he doesn't want to, I think, to marry her, right? Isn't that Lo Yadin?
Yeah, if he doesn't want to marry her. If he doesn't want to, if he doesn't want to designate her, Lo Yadin. If he doesn't want to designate her as his wife,
then he has to, and he has to release her, and he can't sell her to a. To a non-Jew.
He can't sell her off to a non-Jew.
At what point is this not designated her and releasing her?
Ah, so by the time of her servitude.
By the time said, I'm renting her to you for 3 years, whatever it is. You won't charge me my debts for 3 years.
Yeah, in other words, either for whatever the set amount of time was, or by the time that the Avadim go free.
But she doesn't go free like the other ones. Like the males.
So, If the master wants to upgrade this relationship to marriage, it's in his rights to do so. That's called Kiddushei Ye'ud. What?
According to the commentary in Art Scroll. Or to his son.
That's not to the commentary in Art Scroll. That's Rashi. That's Chazal. It's either hit for him or for his...
Stick the God. Art Scroll got it.
Rashi got it from Art Scroll.
No, you suggested.
Oh.
Art Scroll got it from
what would be necessary to say he can't sell her to a non-Jew? He can't do that with any Jewish servant, can he? And you sign on with a Jew, and he's got the right to downgrade your agreement?
Correct. Yes, I'm not sure. So Chazal say this whole thing of Ama Ivriya only works since built in to the idea of an Ama Ivriya is that the master can designate her as his wife and change that relationship. Who can you not sell in Ama Ivriya to?
Someone she can't marry.
To someone she can't marry. You can't sell in Ama Ivriya to a relative who's forbidden to marry her, right? Mm. Because since built into the relationship is the possibility of doing this, it has to be somebody that you can't. Mishum Rabbi Elazar Amru Mochra LaKrovim, but Rabbi Elazar disagrees with Rav Hamnuna, and he says no.
Why not? You
can do it.
No, Rabbi Elazar disagrees with Rav Hamnuna.
Yeah.
Why would isn't Rabbi Elazar a Tana?
I'm sorry. Rav Hamnuna is the motive. The quote begins Ein Mochra. The Tana Kama says Ein Mochra LaKrovim, right? Mishum Rabbi Elazar Amru. But Rabbi Elazar is the Dat Yochid. He disagrees and says, no, you can't sell. Elama, if you sell her to a relative, so then this option, which is normally in play, is not on play. Right? In other words, is the whole concept of Ama Ivriya dependent on it? Or is it ancillary? The idea that you can change the status from Ama to Isha.
Turn the... doesn't have her son, if he's the guy's brother.
But whatever, in other words, if they're... presumably it means the master. The master is, right? The master is the one who's being sold to.
No, right. But he can designate this Ama for his son.
If they're both kosher ladies. If they're both kosher le...
Yeah,
right. Although there, what would be a case where neither of them can marry her? Is there a case where there's a girl who's forbidden? Sure. If the master is the brother-in-law. In other words, Reuven has a daughter, right? He sells the daughter to... Reuven has two daughters, Sarah and Leah. Sarah is married to Avraham. Right? But you want to sell Leah. So you sell Leah to her brother-in-law, to Avraham. Right? So, but then she could marry Avraham's son.
No, you can find a case, though.
To a grandfather. No, because she could marry the uncle. The grandfather's son, the grandfather's other son, who's not the father, is an uncle. She can marry the uncle. Now, we can think of cases. The Gemara is about to introduce one of a different variety. So Vishavyan, and they agree, the Tanakama and Rabbi Elazar agree, this is the top of the Memeo Malal, Shemochra Almana Le Kohen Gadol. You can sell an almana to the Kohen Gadol. Wait a second, the Kohen Gadol can't marry an almana? But every... What? What do you mean, since when?
Because he couldn't. Prohibited from
Kohen Gadol. A Kohen Gadol. A Kohen Hediot can marry an almana. The Kohen Gadol cannot marry neither a divorced woman nor a widow. So
we're talking about a katana.
No, the case here.
The case here is you sell a katana who's an almana.
Who is an almana?
Right. The father, Shem Mochra, the father sells her, an almana, his almana daughter, to a Kohen Gadol. Grusha v'chalutza l'Kohen Hediot. In other words, you can, these Kohanim can purchase an Ama Ivria who would otherwise be forbidden to them. Right? So even the Tanakhama agrees. What do you mean, Naomi?
That's the case. Rebelezer's bringing.
Right? And that's why this is going to become problematic. So the Gemara asks, Hai almana hechidami. How can you have a case of a ktana that's an almana that's now being sold by her father? In other words, what's the problem?
Well, she's married, she's out of her father's.
Ah, it's not because how could you be so young and be an almana? That could happen, right? Houses fall on people. But once she's been married off and becomes an almana, what's the status? What's her status vis-a-vis her father?
They broke the talking, you know.
Yeah, we discussed this last week.
Right.
She maintains her own rights over herself.
Right.
Even though she's a katana, I mean, I suggested psychologically that it, you know, it's a maturing experience. So we give her credit for that.
Yeah, although she's 11 years old, we know how to deal with the money that she has from her.
I mean, she's 11 years old. She's already an almana.
Or a grusha.
Right here, the case is an almana to a kohen gadol, or correct, or a chalutza to kohen hediot. Right, so hechidami ilema dekadsha aviha. So how can it be that she's now been married off to someone else? So if you say that the father has married her off a second time, mi matzi mezabinla.
How do you sell
her? I'm sorry, not I said right. So if the father had sold her the first time. So how can he now, how does she now go back into his reshut once she's become an almana in order to be sold off another time?
That's all. Just married. He married her off the first time because she was an almana or grusha. And he wants to sell her after.
Now he wants to sell her.
Right. The first time he should marry the second
person. So he shouldn't have those rights.
The first time he was just an almana.
The Gemara says, this is the Havamina. The Gemara says he sells her off, she's 11 years old.
Right.
And her husband drops dead.
No, that's not rough. Just marries her off.
No.
What? Marries her off.
The father marries her off.
Right, that's not
rough. Right? Becomes an almana. And then she becomes an almana. Right. And now the father wants to sell her as an ama ivriya. Can he sell her to a Kohen Gadol who can't marry her?
Where are the survivors buried?
So If Rabbi Elazar says you can't sell a girl off to a master who can't potentially marry her, how is the Tanakhama? Rabbi Elazar has no problem because Rabbi Elazar says you don't need to be able to marry her. The Tanakhama says you can't sell a girl off to stay with us. The vacation's coming up for you. You can rest then. The Tanakhama says you can't marry off a girl unless... Wait, stop. Let me clear my mind. The Tanakhama says you can't sell in Ama Ivria unless the master could potentially marry her. A girl has been married off by her father and then gets widowed or divorced. She is still a ktana. Now, even Rabbi Elazar says that...
For Kohen, it's okay.
Even the Tanakhama says the Kohen can marry this girl if she's a grusha, and the Kohen Gadol can marry her even if she's an almana.
So I think the theory of something you said before.
Doesn't say that.
Yeah. He said, no, it doesn't. Purchase her. But there's something you mentioned before that maybe is relevant here, is that the marriage of a kohen to a grusha or an almana, I'm assuming in this case, to a kohen gadol to an almana, it's also, is the nisuin are tofsin, even if they're not permitted. So that might be why they agree on the issue of the thing, because actually you have a case where he should marry her, but he can't. Technically, he can marry her. There's no, he can't even, the other case, he can't marry at all because there's no possibility. So it's not even,
So the Gemara says, ha, the third line, ha, ein adam mocheret bito l'shifchut acharishut. So how can the father sell off a daughter after she's already been married? So what do you have to say?
That
he didn't sell the first time.
She doesn't. The person buying her doesn't have to be able to marry her.
No, because this is a case about a ketana that accepted her own kiddushin.
He wants his son to marry her.
After a girl has already been
married
off,
right,
or sold off into slavery, if she exits either of those conditions and is still a ketana, she does not go back to her father. Her father has no authority over her.
She was an indentured servant right, period, and she was 9 years old as indentured servant. Right.
But so here, ein adam mocher et bito l'shivchut. A father cannot sell his daughter off as an ama evriya achar ishut, after she has been a married woman.
Okay.
Even a married ketana. So in this case, if she's a grusha or an almana, what do you know?
That
she has been a married woman. And what's happening in this case?
That we're still going to the kohen. That we're still allowed
the Mishnah
to sell to the kohen gadol.
Right.
Which means
either
way, which has to mean that the person to whom you're selling it to doesn't have to be in a position.
No, it's the other way around.
No.
It's not about the person who receives it. It's about whether the father can sell her. So apparently she was never.
The point of this brisa is
to negate what
the point of this brisa is that the father can sell her off after she's already been married, which contradicts the idea that once she has been married and leaves that marriage, either through being widowed or divorced, the father has rights to her again. How can that be? So the Gemara says, El alav, the kadish I hanafshe. No, what must have been, from what kind of marriage was she divorced or widowed? One that she entered herself. This is the case of the ketana that accepts her own kiddush. The father has it as one chance. So if it's a puzzle, right? There's a girl. She's a grusha. If I label a girl as a grusha, what do you know about her former marital status?
She was married.
If she was already married, what do we know the father cannot do? Sell her after she's no longer married. But in this case, he is. So what's the case from which she's a grusha or which she's an almana? Not a case where the father married her off, but where she married herself off. What case is that? The case under discussion of a ketana that accepts her own kesef kiddushin. So if she accepts her own kesef kiddushin, and she leaves that marriage through death or divorce, and we call her a grusha or an almana, what do we know about the status of that marriage?
That it was the zechal, it was an actual
marriage. That it was a marriage.
That's an issue.
And therefore, this is against whom? Ula, who says it's halachically insignificant.
Went from Ula.
I told you, we've been looking at the deck of cards. If we had a blackboard, it would be better.
No, it's wonderful.
Yes. So, or even a what do they call those? A
flip chart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you understand? So obviously Ula is wrong because the halacha does view this as a mitzvah. So what's the case? She entered the marriage herself. And when she exits the marriage, how do we look at that marriage? Well, it was a marriage for the purpose of her now being an almana or a grusha.
But it wasn't a marriage.
But the father never relinquished his rights. And therefore, when she leaves that marriage...
Depending on what age, if she leaves the marriage...
Yeah, obviously, this is only if she's still under bat mitzvah, right? When she leaves that marriage, then the father had never relinquished his rights. It still is. Ela lav de kadish I nafshe v'ka kore la almana. So she was Mekadesh herself, but she's still called an almana. Obviously, that means there was some halachic significance there. Omar Rav Amram, Omar Rav Yitzchak, Hacha b'kedushe Yehud. No, we're talking about something else. Maybe there's a different way to explain it. That's kedushe Yehud. How does kedushe Yehud work? The father sells the daughter off as an Amma Ivriya. The Ketana, the little girl, is an Amma Ivriya, is a Jewish maidservant. Do they make a lechayim?
No.
No.
They're married.
Well, it depends how people live.
No, because it's not like a happy thing. Right? It's an act of desperation. Right? I mean, you've seen this in 1,000 movies, like a poor family, often in the American South. Maybe it's an African-American family. Maybe it's a white family.
Stories like that, right? Immigrants.
And they give the child away to some relatives or something to be raised, you know, far away because it's the only chance for these people to survive. The family then has one less mouth to feed, and this is one mouth which will get fed by sending them from South Carolina to Chicago.
To Bel Air.
Whatever it is. Why Bel Air?
It's like the French Prince of Bel Air.
Oh, the French, I never watched that show. Right? But no, but exactly, that's exactly, was that what happened in that show?
Not exactly.
Oh.
Not literally, no.
So it's a tragedy. That's what's happening here. But when you marry her off, even though it's like very unusual and probably people are a little nervous and maybe her mother is not happy with the whole thing, you make a lechayim. Right? So the father sells her off as an ama ivriya. And we don't know what he's hoping. Well, what's the best scenario here? But when he sells her as an ama ivriya, there's no kiddushin. But how does yehud work? It's very strange. It's kiddushin without an act of kiddushin. All the master has to do at any point before she becomes bat mitzvah is to say, poof, you are now my wife.
Wow.
Maybe before Adam. Right? All he has to do is upgrade her designation. And then we say that the money that was given, it was ki'ilu, as if it was kiddushin instead of whatever.
Oh, thanks. She gets for the two or three divorces here.
Then, in other words, he has all the same obligations that any husband has, yeah.
He has the 200.
He's
exclusive of the
Mizuki. So then, if he divorces her, or she's an almana from that marriage, so then also... The father never explicitly gave up his rights to marry her off. The rights were suspended the whole time she was an Amma Ivriah. But when her Yehud husband, this weird upgraded from servant to husband,
wife.
So now maybe the father still retains some rights. Maybe that's the case of an almana, which can then be married off to, an almana which can then be sold off to a kohen or to the kohen gadol.
Even if it wasn't a
kedusha. No, because there's no real kiddushin.
He did marry her.
He did marry her, but it was Yehud. So then the Gemara says, in that weird case, so then the father retains enough rights that he can then sell her off. That is a case where she could be sold after she...
This weird condition, and then marital relations, where they can't divorce her and sell her to the...
No, but maybe they didn't have... Maybe they had kiddushin, but not nisuin.
That has to be assumed in the case.
V'aliba de Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda, de Omar me'ot harishonot, lav l'kiddushin nitnu. And this is all according to the opinion in the sugya of Yehud. This is all according to the opinion of Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda that says that the money that was given was money for the sale of an ama ivriya. The other opinion in that sugya of Yehud says no. When the master slash potential husband gives the money, it's conditional. And when he does Yehud, when he says, I now designate you my wife, then retroactively we say that the money the father got was Kesef Kiddushin. But in which case, then it really is a Kiddushin. So this whole theoretical concept works only in the case of, only according to that opinion of Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Yehuda. This is the end of the sugya here about Kiddushe Ketana. But the whole question of how Kiddushe Ketana works is still rather puzzling. And the whole idea that when a Ketana accepts Kiddushin on her own without her father's opinion is similarly even more, but the idea that it has any halachic meaning is even more puzzling. When she does it, according to Rav Nachman, says that that when the father retroactively shows that he was okay with this, then she needs a get retroactively, and it's real kiddushin. It's not some kind of dirabanon case. So the Gemara assumes that if the father's intention can be verified, where he says, "Oh, wonderful, saves us from making a wedding," or he says, "I've always wanted a son-in-law like that," or whatever he might say. So then we say it's valid, but there's all types of problems with this. Number one, even if the father afterwards was satisfied with this, how do we view that act in real time? In other words, the act was performed by a ketana. In the normal case of a ketana being married off, the father accepts the kesef kiddushin as her agent, as her shaliach, as her the one who has authority over her. But when the ketana accepts the kiddushin, she has no dat. She has no agency over her own acts from a halachic perspective. So how can that even be? How can there even be a kinyan in her accepting the money? That's the way, right? Ha'isha niknet be shlosha drachim. Right, but how is there a kinyan if she? If her accepting money has no,
could it be talking about the case where they were mishudachim before?
No, but even if they were mishudachim before, no. The act.
But if they were mishudachim, then you could say that the fact that they're mishudachim, the father's agreement was existing,
right, but
even though she did the action,
right? But that's meaningless. In other words, If you and I agree, please don't misunderstand what I'm about to say. Please don't misunderstand what I'm about to say and say I compared a Jewish girl to a cow. But let's say you and I agree that I'm going to sell you my cow. When does that sale take place? Right now there's milk in the udder. Whose milk is it?
Still yours.
It's still mine. And if you come along and milk the cow, you're stealing my milk.
Right.
Once you become the owner of the cow and all of its contents are yours. So let's say you come along before I agree that I'm going to sell you my, or let's take a different example. We've all sold and bought secondhand cars, right? So that's some agreement that I'm going to sell you my car. Doesn't mean that the car is yours now, because I'm still planning on driving it for the rest of the week, and I'm only going to sell it to you next week. So if you come along and hotwire the car, that's grand theft auto, right? So let's say you come along and you want the cow before I'm ready to hand it over, and you put the money that we agreed on, and you hang it off Bessie's horn, and you say, I gave the money. Now I can take the cow. Does that count? No. It only counts when you put the money into the hand of the person who was authorized to make the sale. Here, Lahavdil, not comparing Jewish girls to cows. Here, Lahavdil, only putting money into the hand of dad who is authorized to accept it has any halachic meaning.
There's an exclusion to that case.
What's the exclusion?
Well, we're talking about a marriage that took place in effect. It's an
iPhone. Right. So, in other words, this is what we have to figure out. What's the mechanism by which that works? No, but then there's another problem. So, if you want to say that when the daughter accepts it and the father either had pre-endorsed it by saying, I agree that one day she will marry him, or he retroactively endorses it by saying, oh, I'm glad this happened. Becholzotsu, then you have to say that she, by accepting the money, is acting as his,
agent?
His shaliach. Except what did we say on the last daf? Yeah. That ketanim can't be shlichim. And then also, how does this whole retroactive thing work? Right? Why does determining after this all happened, in other words, if after it all happened, the father says, oh, what a wonderful shidduch, what a nice boy. So then what should you have to do? Then you should do kiddushin again in the normal way. But that's not what we say. Well, let me finish the questions and then you can ask your questions on the questions. Right? In other words, in order for her act of accepting the money to be considered shlichus, even if we assume that a katana can act as a shlicha, what's definitional in shlichut? That you have to be appointed, right? That you have to be appointed, right? You can't go in and on your own initiative decide I'm going to be shliach for someone else, right? In other words, let's say I owe Reuven money. Right? So if I say to you, here, David, take this money, you're my shaliach, go back and pay Reuven. So as soon as you give it to Reuven, what happens to my debt? It's canceled. But let's say on your own. Or let's say you know, it works in the other way. Let's say you know that I'm interested in I don't mean like the way normal people would work and friendships work and all types of things, but let's say you know that I want to borrow some money from Reuven, and you go and you borrow the money on my behalf from Reuven. Does that generate, without my knowledge and without my appointing you as my shaliach, does that generate a debt on my behalf? No, this is your debt. This is your debt. I can accept the debt from you. You are allowed to transfer debt, but this is your debt. You're not my shaliach, right? Because there we say, "Ein mezakin l'adam shelo b'fanav." You can't. So, Ben, what did you want to ask? You've been very patiently.
Three ways a person can be married. So we ruled out, in the case of a minor, we ruled out the kesed and shtar.
Yeah.
We haven't ruled out bia unless it's ruled out because.
Well, Chazal have ruled it out for everyone. We don't do.
No, I understand the role of everyone. But
no, so then if we say that sexual relations are a form of creating kiddushin, and they engage in this, so either we say it's an act of znut, or we say it's an act of kiddushin, right? But in and of itself, it doesn't necessarily create. I mean, even Chazal, who understand that. Who accept the idea in principle that
that kiddushin can be brought about in effect through bia, right? Not every act of bia is ipso facto an act of kiddushin, right? There is bia znut. So there are a variety of answers to these questions. The Rosh says it limits what a katan can do, or what we thought a katan can do. It says that even though a katan or katana can't perform an act of kinyan, can't accept and generate a financial transaction, when someone else, the makneh, the person who is transferring the money or the object to the katan, so then the katan or the katana can acquire the object. In other words, the katan or the katana can't transfer an object elsewhere, but you can give a gift to a katan or a katana, and then it becomes them. Meaning, in an act of kinyan, whose da'at is required? The kone or the makne? The makne, the person who, because after all, the makne is the one who's giving up the ownership on the object. So in that case,
the ownership of the money.
Yes, but in kiddushin, it's a one-way transfer. It's not like a normal case where, like, I give you money and you give me a cow. Here, it's just the transfer of the money which creates this metaphysical reality of kiddushin. Right? If it was an achinami, if it was a two-ring ceremony, right? So then, if halacha required not just merely, you know, maybe ambivalently tolerated something, but if in a parallel universe halacha required a two-ring ceremony, which again, let me be clear, it does not. Don't go saying that that's what I said. But theoretically, if halacha required a two-ring ceremony, so then this wouldn't work because the katana would be able to do the reciprocal part. So the das of the makne, who transfers the object to the possession of the katan, assists the katan in the act of making, or the katana in making the kinyan herself. So since the man is the makne, who's makadesh the woman, in that case the Rosh says, an achinami, a katana accepting, you can't say that the katana accepting the ring, that the kinyan doesn't completely work at all, right? Doesn't work at all. Right? Meaning you say there is enough here for a kinyan. So that solves the first problem. In certain circumstances, a katana can, if it's a one-way kinyan, so in certain circumstances, the das of the makne is enough to get you over that hurdle. And then the Rosh says that in terms of a katan or katana being or not being able to be a shaliach, so generally shlichus means that the shaliach is nothing. What have we said 1,000 times so far? The shaliach is just the long arm of the mishaleach, right? When I send you to repay the debt, what's happening here? I'm stretch arm strong. I'm repaying the debt. My long arm reaches all the way to the person who lent me the money, and you are my long arm, right? Mm-hmm. But a katan or a katana certainly can't do that, right? It certainly cannot be appointed a shliach for that. But that's not what's happening when a katana accepts the kesef kiddushin, right, on behalf of her father. In the case we've been talking about, the daughter herself, she's not just the long arm. She's not just the Pony Express. She's the beneficiary of what's going on because she is now becoming mikudeshet to the man. So the katana, in such a case, the Rosh says, in such a case, against all other situations, the katana is able to act as a shalicha in accepting the kiddushin for herself. So that solves the other problem. Right? That solves the other problem if and only if the father somehow indicates that that was the case. In the earlier case, when you go on your own and pay back a loan for me, right? So what do we say? If I didn't appoint you, that's your money, right? But no, because Zakin La'adam Shelo B'fanav, you're doing me a favor. Now I owe you the money. I have to pay you back. And if you're a good friend, you could say to me, you know what, Jeff, you're off the hook. I'm mevatel the loan. Right? Or you can want the money, but maybe you'll be a little more generous about the conditions than Ben was. He's a real stickler. Right? So because it's a benefit for me, you're able to generate a shlichut, and when I retroactively, but if I say to you, if you come to me and say, I paid your loan for you, and I say, no, you didn't. I would never want to be in debt to you. I do not accept the fact that you went off on your own. If you paid that money to him, that's up to you to go back and get that for him, but I'm still intending on paying him back myself. Right? So you'd be out of luck. You'd be out of luck. So, but retroactively, when I say, oh, David, you're the best, thank you for doing that for me, so that shows that you were my shaliach. So these are the mechanisms. This is how the Rush explains. These are the mechanisms by how such a thing, which goes against the logic of everything we've said, how such a thing could be theoretically available. I do, however, hasten to add, all of this is very strange. And certainly nowadays, I mean, Chazal already, in the times of the Talmud, they did anything they could to get rid of this whole idea of selling off daughters, marrying off daughters, etc. It's a biblical idea that already in the times of Chazal had gone out of fashion, and certainly by our sensitivity. Yes. And so in our day, certainly this whole idea is very, shall we say, unappealing. Repugnant and appealing, right? Even though technically speaking, as I mentioned, that case that happened in Montreal 20 years ago, technically speaking, it exists. Oh, I'm sorry. I mentioned last week that in the 90s, I forget the exact details, but there's a long article in Tradition, a journal of Orthodox Jewish Thought by Rav Bleich. Rabbi J. David Bleich, not one of his regular columns, it was a standalone article. There was this menuvel who was caught up in a bad divorce with his wife. He had a young daughter, and he made a claim that he had done kiddushei ketana for her, unbeknownst to her, and that unless the wife agreed to all of his terms, he wasn't even going to reveal who the chatan was, which means the girl, for all intents and purposes, 11 and a half year old girl, whatever she was, for all intents and purposes, was going to be stuck for the rest of her life. In the end, they solved it, however they solved it. But he claimed that they were ready, but he doesn't have to say who they were.
Yeah, right. But right? It occurred to me there had to be four people that on this, in the chatan and 280.
But as Lokola, in other words, he later claimed that he'd made up the whole story, and the Gedolei Poskim of the 1990s were involved in solving this case. But I'll send you the article. It was in Tradition. I mean, there were articles. I mean, it was a terrible Chil Hashem. It was in the New York Times. It was as you can imagine. Okay. Anyway. Yeah. Anyway, we will continue next week.